Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. If you're just joining us, this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've talked with this next guest before on this program. I always enjoy our chats. He's been very patient to get him back on the Maggie Dawn Show to talk about the beginning of this new Supreme Court term. It kicked off on October 6th, a mere 10 days ago, and there is a massive case that the court will be weighing in on in very short order that may, in effect, gut the central provisions of the Voting Rights Act. When you take this in context with the mid-decade gerrymandering being commandeered by our king, President Donald Trump, it spells portends a very, very dire future, not just for Democrats, but for Republicans as well. So with all of that as prequel, it is my privilege and honor to bring back to the show Devin Ombres. He is the Senior Director for Courts and Legal Policy with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He has an absolutely stellar resume. I'm not going to read all of it to you fine folks, but suffice it to say, he served as a senior counsel lawyer to Representative Jamie Raskin and helped Representative Raskin managed the portfolio of policy issues that were before the House Judiciary Committee. That was a real boring committee for a whole gamut of years. Of course, I joke. Welcome back to the show, Devin. We've got a lot of action in the Supreme Court this term, and it's starting out with a bang.
It is evergreen, and John Roberts' hatred for the VRA, which has been a through line of his career since he's been with the Reagan administration, is now his life's mission. Is coming to fruition when he has the opportunity to strike down Section 2 of the VRA, the last remaining bastion of the Voting Rights Act that protects minority voters across the country.
So this is this case called Louisiana v. Calais. Tell us what that case is about and how it may, again, render null, void, and no longer enforceable this second section of the Voting Rights Act.
Sure, and I'm sure you've talked to your audience a lot about the mid-decade redistricting.
Yes.
So after every decennial census, the states are supposed to redistrict, and Louisiana got six seats, and they drew a new map, and they have about 30% African American population in the state. They drew one majority minority district, one black district in the entire state, out of even though 30% of the population is black. The Fifth Circuit, which is not known for being progressive by any means, said,
I would say quite the opposite, right? The Fifth Circuit has been sort of the most Trumpian of circuits.
Yes.
Sorry for the interruption.
No.
Fifth Circuit even said no good.
The Fifth Circuit said, no, you're violating Section 2 of the VRA. You got to redraw the map. So they redrew and gerrymandered the heck out of it and drew a snake straight through the middle of Louisiana to create a second majority minority district, a second black district. And they did it in such a way as to protect Speaker Mike Johnson, Steve Scalise, a couple other of the white members from down there. And then the people who describe themselves as three non-African American voters, which means white folks, decided that this was a violation of their voting rights, and it was a dilution of their voting rights, and so they challenged it. Court heard argument last year. For whatever reason, they couldn't come to a decision, and they resubmitted it for argument. But this time they said, please tell us whether Section 2 of the VRA violates the 14th and 15th Amendments, which are the Reconstruction Amendments, which were specifically brought into being for the purpose of protecting the newly freed slaves 160 years ago. The purpose of the amendments was to end discrimination against black people, to provide some form of equality. And so now they're saying, wait, maybe the Voting Rights Act, which was enacted to enforce the 14th and 15th Amendments, is unconstitutional some way? It's really just turning the entire history and concept of originalism on its head, despite the fact that six members of the court claim to be originalists.
Yeah, it is truly shocking, as is what I'm going to call this complete inversion, and we see it in case after case, and frankly, in white grievance and fragility after white grievance and fragility, especially from the right. It's like, this is reverse racism. No, it's not. Black people minority folks are 30% of the population in the state of Louisiana. they gerrymandered the hell out of it to make sure that black people only got one out of six seats or their preferred candidates. If it's inverted racial discrimination, what are you getting, like too many seats, like too much power?
It's so much a larger part of this anti-DEI movement that's pushing through the right. There was a case, Fearless Fund, out of the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, where they said that a black woman-owned venture capital firm couldn't only provide funds to black woman-owned companies, despite the fact that venture capital funding only goes to less than 2% of black woman-owned companies. I think something like 90%+ goes to white-owned companies and venture capital firms. So that 2% apparently was discrimination. Same thing last year in Students for Fair Admissions, when they completely ended the concept of racial considerations in collegiate admissions. They said, we're not permitted to look at whether you are, you know, if whether our campuses can kind of mirror the makeup of the nation. They're not allowed to do that. They are completely doing it all in the concept of white people are being discriminated against, because when you've never had to face inequality, equity is persecution.
This is so baffling to me. Like, white and especially white rich people, right, you are controlling the vast amounts of productive capacity. You take down the vast amounts of wealth in this country. You take up the vast amount of seats in all of our Ivy League universities and colleges. You are the ones that have always had the greatest power, and someone else is saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't let the legacy of that dominating impact be what we have in perpetuity in this country, and that's reverse discrimination.
And that's the kicker of it all, because the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were intended and passed to create a level playing field for everybody in the country, regardless of racial makeup. And throughout the South, throughout the Jim Crow, post-Reconstruction era, those were ignored completely. We saw in the 1960s an insurgence of people saying, we need to be treated as human beings. We are men. That's what their signs said. We are men. And there was a huge shift in the way that equality has been advanced over the course of the last 60 years. This is crazy. The law school that I went to had its first black professor hired in 1990. All right. Yeah. That's an insane thing to me. And I come from the South. So at this point, what they're even doing is they're not even ignoring things. They are shifting the narrative to say that these things that were intended to create equality among all Americans and to end discrimination against minorities were actually supposed to be racially neutral. They were intended to be colorblind, and that is an absolute bastardization of every historical tenet that we know about the Civil War.
Yeah, again, all of these originalists are ignoring the precise purpose of this. It wasn't to create a faux concept of equality that only exists under the law, that has no relationship to the actual reality of how opportunities, access, wealth, power, influence are distributed here on Earth One.
On a similar bent, we can talk about originalism in the context of creating a kingly presidency by this Supreme Court in Trump v. U.S. when they said presidents are indeed above the law. Apparently none of them have ever read the Declaration of Independence, which has the litany of abuses that we revolted against King George for. And Donald Trump has been speed running those abuses in the last nine
months.
It's
like he's got a punch list. Check.
Ticking them all off, and we're coming real close to violations of the Third Amendment with you can't be forced to quarter soldiers in homes. So they're not making us, living in D.C., there are some, I actually feel bad for these guys, because they're away from their families and their work and everything. And there's guys in battle rattle guarding the Mike's, the Jersey Mike's sub shop that I go to a couple times a week. And I always ask them, like, are they going to let you guys go home anytime soon? And they're like, we don't know. And they're not happy.
No,
they're not happy. They don't want to be doing this. But because we're living in a war zone in a city that I've lived in for 15 years and have never seen a crime occur, that's just the altered reality that we live in. I like that you call that Earth One.
Yeah, Earth One. You know, President Johnson said once something along the lines of, if you can convince the white man that he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice that you're picking his pocket. And so much that the distractionary nonsense around the anti-woke, which is like, you are against the diversity that makes our country strong. You're against the equity that enables us to continue to be a superpower. And you're against the inclusion that we fought the Civil War to enshrine in a system of laws. That's what anti-wokeism is. And it occurs to me, as we've seen the Supreme Court consistently turn away from originalism when convenient, there is no through line that you can discern that is theoretically, from a legal analysis approach, consistent from case to case. It stands out in sharp relief when we look at whether we're talking about Fearless Fund, right, and the fact that despite the reality of venture capital money flowing almost exclusively, except for a razor-thin amount, infinitesimally small percentages to Black women, ignoring that reality and saying a Black female-run venture fund, which is private, by the way, she can't decide to exclusively fund other Black female-led startups. The Voting Rights Act case, which is now going to say that somehow white people deserve to have an over-distribution of congressional seats, and the Harvard SFFA case, right, that says, no, we can't consider race amongst a collection of factors to ensure that our students have an Earth One experience that is reflective of the American population. And yet, when this very same Supreme Court looked at the removing of rights, not the conferral of a benefit through venture capital, right, through college admissions, through voting access, that conference of a benefit or this affirming of rights of historically disadvantaged and, you know, a population of people that were enslaved by white people. As soon as it comes to stripping away rights and taking people's rights away, then they said in the Alien Enemies Act case, yeah, you can absolutely look at race as a number of factors, which all are basically pretext for race. So they're saying, yes, you can racially discriminate to strip people of their Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights, but you certainly can't do that to ensure that they have equal voting rights, access to capital, or education.
No. No, I want to add two things that you said.
I want you to hold those two things, Devin. Okay. We've got to squeeze in a few messages. This is going to be a really, really quick segue here, folks. Stay with us. We got Devin Ombrez of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're talking about the Supreme Court's new term and basically the wholesale endorsement of the attack on Black folks by the Supreme Court. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.